Welcome to the Experience Starter Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Aiden Kahn. Aiden is a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2024, and he is also a dual-degree student in the MBA Masters of Education dual degree. I recently connected with Aiden to talk more about his background, what led him to Darden, what he's enjoyed about his time in Charlottesville, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Aiden Kahn. Aiden, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, okay. Thanks for having me. I'm feeling very excited. I'm feeling a little bit like a celebrity getting to be on a podcast.
Well, it's great to have you here. For most students, I will say this is their first time being on a podcast when they come on one of our admissions podcasts. Do you have prior podcast experience?
I have prior failed podcast experience. I mean, coming from a friend group of creatives, there have definitely been attempts at making a podcast that went nowhere. So this one, I feel really confident in.
Well, I love that. There was a time in the pandemic, I think, when a lot of people were maybe trying to podcast and you were just stuck at home and talking to people on Zoom. So why don't we just turn this into a show? Everybody might want to hear what we're talking about. Something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, sometimes you're right. Sometimes you're wrong. Not every conversation is that, you know, thought provoking.
Well, it's typically low barrier to entry. So, you know, that's one of the benefits of podcasting. Well, it's great to have you here, Aiden. It's nice to be able to talk with you today. So how is everything going? How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I mean, so I'm a second year student in the full-time program. And at this point in the journey, right, it's sort of you've crested and you're heading down in terms of intensity. And so I've been calling this my retirement period. At Darden, I get to pursue my interests and my passions more than be stuck to like a rigid academic structure or something like that.
Love that metaphor. No one has ever referred to this final semester as a retirement period. What would that make your first year at Darden?
I think that would then, instead of the metaphor, be like the corporate time, right? That would be you're climbing the ladder. You're paying your dues. You're putting money in the bank.
Got it. All right. Well, so you're really enjoying the fruits of your labor, so to speak, here in this final semester.
Absolutely.
Do you have a bucket list, a few things that you want to make sure that you accomplish before you leave Charlottesville?
Absolutely. So first off, one I'm working on right now is I'm getting to write a case with a professor here. At Darden. And, you know, I mean, obviously the case method here is very prolific and you read hundreds and hundreds of them as a student. I had not realized that you can actually write one. So this really came together naturally a couple of weeks ago and I've been working on that. So working on my write a case, be a case author bucket list item. And then sort of in the greater sort of like Charlottesville area of activities, I'm sort of embarrassed to say we talk a lot about nature and a lot about hikes here. I have not partaken enough in those in my first year. So really like looking forward to get out to like Shenandoah, Skyline Drive, like get to see all this like this majesty that's around us that you can just see from just about anywhere in the distance. Just haven't taken the time to drive that hour and actually go do it.
Can you tell us about your case idea? What you're working on right now?
Sure, yeah. So it's sort of, it's at the intersection of the crisis communications and higher education. I think like as everybody's probably pretty aware in the news the past couple of months, there's been an increased focus on a couple of universities and their presidents and how they are reacting to current events at large. Like what statements are they putting out? Are they saying the right thing? And there's been some backlash to them to the point where certain university presidents are resigning/losing their jobs. And so the case really focuses on a couple of examples of that. And from like a crisis communications perspective, like what did they do the right thing? What could you do differently? Who do you like shape your message to? Who should you keep in mind as like if you put your shoes in the yourself into the shoes of a university president, like who are you crafting a message to at the end of the day?
To me, that's super interesting. Have you listened to the Freakonomics episode with Michael Roth, the Wesleyan president, talking about these presidents?
Yes, I have. Yes, it's. I mean, there's a lot of continued publishing and reporting on this, especially through like the New York Times and the Chronicle of Higher Education. This is like really, you know, in the education industry, this has really lit a fuse, and everybody is fascinated by how it's playing out. It's sort of, I think a lot of people are saying this marks a change in like the public's perception of higher education and what we expect out of it and its role and responsibilities. So it's almost a turning point, which is really cool to witness live, right?
Well, I have to think that the job of a president, particularly when it comes to current events, has changed dramatically over the past 20, 30 years. You go back in time, how many presidents were expected to have positions on what's going on in the world and be able to state those publicly and communicate with the communities of learners and alumni. That probably wasn't as much part of the job description broadly for presidents, but it is absolutely part of the job description now. And
yeah.
Who does that well? Who doesn't do that well? The consequences of not doing that well? I think we're seeing it in real time.
Is there any way to do it well? Is a fascinating question as well. Is it too complex? Like, do you have too many stakeholders out there that you just, there's no one unified way of approaching it?
That is such a good point, because if you think about internally, the student populations that you have, all kinds of viewpoints, perspectives, experiences related to these issues, alumni. And then, of course, you know, a lot of that, it felt like a lot of the outrage as well about some of the presidents that we're speaking about here came from outside of these communities. So maybe not the most immediate stakeholders they might be thinking about, but people who were just watching and reacting to it, people in the public at large.
Yeah, I know. I'm sort of like, you know, borrowing from the business world, we're like aware of activists, investors. But it's interesting to think of what that looks like in higher education and the place where people don't, there's no stocks, they're not publicly traded, but there are donors and there are boards and there are sort of implicit power dynamics happening there with those people. And so we see on Twitter now there's people who are alumni of these schools or donors to these schools who have platforms there who are taking the time to say, state their opinion about what they're doing, whether right or wrong, and are having a place in the discourse on whether these presidents, these universities are doing the right thing.
Yeah, the other thing that's very interesting is the schools in question, very prominent universities, very much in the public eye. But I think this lesson is obviously extends beyond just those schools with significant notoriety, significant prestige.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, even more at home in Virginia. There's been a couple of universities in the Virginia sort of system that have been talking about making cuts to programs, cutting sort of like classical programs you see at universities like foreign languages, things like that, because they're not making money and they're getting more backlash than I think those presidents anticipated when they announced these changes that they're doing sort of to survive. But, you know, not, you wouldn't think of them as these like big name brand universities and colleges, but at the same time, they still are getting a lot of heat for the changes that they have to make in a changing era. And so I think across the board, the role of the president, all these people are a lot more public figures than they thought.
That is, man, I look forward to reading this case. That is ripped from the headlines, Law and Order style. I love it.
Absolutely.
Well, Aiden, tell us a little bit more about your background. Who are you and what did you do before coming to Dart?
Yeah, I'm that sort of quote unquote classic non-traditional MBA that you read about on Reddit. My first thing was that in my undergrad, I was a film student and I was leaving undergrad, moving to LA and I was going to be a screenwriter. And I worked in entertainment for year and a half. I did that sort of classic thing you hear about in the media. You are a barista at Starbucks. Well, you also intern or do low paying or no paying work on sets. You network, you couch surf, all of that. I found after a year and change of doing that, I was really burnt out and it wasn't very sustainable. I wasn't having the impact that I wanted to have in my career. My work didn't feel like it had a lot of meaning, maybe because it wasn't cohesive or maybe because it wasn't at the right level. But I just felt that I was spending my time wrong. And so I made the first pivot or transition of my career. And I went back home, which is the Northeast, sort of the Boston area for me. And what there is a lot of in New England is work in education. And so made a pivot to education sort of on a whim, but really found a home there and a purpose there. My first job in education was working with a group that went into and sort of advised schools, public schools, charter schools, and their teachers on how to be more inclusive of historically marginalized students, particularly in STEM, and design their curriculums, design their extracurricular activities, and reinvent them so we might help change this really persistent problem in the tech industry, which is that there are a lot of groups who have been historically sort of left out of those careers. And that was, I got to work with fantastic people, fantastic thought leaders. And that just seemed like such purpose-driven work that I loved it. And so I was in this education field again, but I think, as is the story with anybody who works in public education, especially as their first or second career, there's like a huge burnout factor there as well. Being in these schools and dealing with like really big problems every day. So I made a little bit of a switch halfway through, stayed in education, but went and worked for university and did some more classic strategy work for them, still around these topics and these initiatives related to increasing participation, but more at sort of like a high level, introduced me to things like finance, things like that. And I think that sort of, that gets us to the thinking about business and MBA part of all of it.
So what landed you exactly on an MBA? How did this idea come to you? You mentioned that you're this kind of non-traditional student you read about on Reddit. I feel like most of the people who've come on our podcast would define themselves as a non-traditional student, which has been, it's fascinating. At what point does that binary break down? I think it's fully broken down at this point.
I hope we're close. Yeah, we really, no one's a traditional student for this. It's a weird label to put on anybody. But I think when it sort of clicked was I was working in these public schools and then I was working in this university and I was working with very, very smart people, like domain experts in education, in diversity, equity, inclusion, in STEM, professors, things like that, like super, super smart people. And the thing I noticed about all of them was to be effective, they all had a partner in crime. And that person typically had an MBA and typically was a lot more business minded, knew a lot more about systems and systems change, and knew how to navigate complex organizations, and was just like the key to unlocking being really effective in all of these initiatives. And as I looked at that, I was like, I don't think I'm a domain expert. Like, I don't think I want to spend years and years getting a PhD on a really specific topic. I want to have the ability, have the skill set to help these really smart people sort of unlock the change and impact that they want to have. And I think the nice part about it, me just being so exploratory and like loving to try out all sorts of different things, is if you have that skill set, it can be in like one place with one domain, but it could also be somewhere else. And so you get this opportunity, I think, to navigate all sorts of different topics and areas with that same skill set and have impact regardless. So I was looking at them. Everybody had MBAs who was doing this. They were all super cool. I wanted to be a part of that club.
How did you land on Darden? What got you interested in Darden specifically?
Yeah, I think there's sort of the academic part and the practical part, to be blunt. The academic part was easy. When I Googled I wanted to keep this education piece in mind. When I Googled dual degree, MBA, Masters of Education, it's like Darden and one or two other places that are explicitly present for doing this. And that was a key selling point for me, that academically I could come here, I could have this really rigorous business education with people who are very good at it, and at the same time, be able to pursue a little bit more depth into a topic area that I was really passionate about. Like, still keep this education piece with me. I didn't have to come here and just learn finance and accounting and come out the other side and be this like MBA powerhouse only. And so that was really appealing to me. I will say there's other really like nice parts about the dual degree program here. Like, it is really intentionally designed. It doesn't create a lot more effort or stress on you as a student. It is very cost effective, to put it lightly. So there are a lot of academic pieces here that were appealing. My practical piece that sort of segues into the practical piece. You know, I was, as I was navigating this, going to get an MBA and making this big life transition, I wasn't doing it alone. I have my fiance, I have my dog. I think that's true of a lot of people, that they're coming into this and they have families. And as I was like thinking about entering an MBA, which is a period when you don't make money or income, there are things about Charlottesville that are very attractive. I mean, it is a better cost of living than some of the other places we were looking at. There's a lot more space here. You get a little bit more bang for your buck. You know, we were looking at apartments, and as opposed to our search in other cities, like, we'd be able to get more rooms. There'd be things like dog parks nearby. Like, it felt like, from like a practical like phase of life place that I was in, that this worked really well.
All right, so you come to Darden, relocate to Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. What were the first few months of school like, the adjustment process to being a first year student in an MBA program and also doing a dual degree?
I'm sure no one says it was easy. I'd love to meet that person. It was hard, right? You hear that from everybody, because it's hard academically. We all know that. You are making this life transition. You're moving yourself to a new place. For me, it was like 10-ish hours away, like loading all the stuff into the Toyota Highlander and cruising down 95, with my fiance and helping her navigate changing her life as well at the same time, from a work point of view, from a living situation point of view. Like, there were a lot of balls in the air in the first couple of weeks. So it made it really difficult. I will say, at the same time, like, that fact is not ignored. And you can tell that from like the design of the Darden program, like how people interact with you, some of the admins and professors. Like, there is a real consciousness of that you're sort of, this is a ramp up more than a 0 to 80 fast sort of deal. And so I really appreciated that sort of intentional design piece to the core, especially the first couple of weeks. And I know, talking with some of the professors now, I think one of the craziest things to me is that I'm like very close with them, and like we go and do social things as well. Unique part of this experience. But I was talking with one of them who does one of the finance classes, and she was asking me, she's like, okay, like, we are thinking about changing the order to this because we think this is happening in students' life around September, late September, early October. I was just sort of struck as we were having this conversation that it was like, wow, you're constantly interrogating this experience and trying to design around it and with it. And that just, nobody says, you know, mission accomplished at any point here. Like, we're always trying to improve. And so that makes me very, very hopeful and very, very proud of this place that I've chosen.
How do you feel like your education coursework has added to your MBA experience?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten such rich sort of connection to the community through the education coursework. There is first, and it's sort of designed explicitly to help with that. Part of my graduation requirements is I have to go and work with a community partner of some kind in the greater Charlottesville area on a project for 5-6 months. So I'm in the midst of it right now. I'm working with a local charter school that has had some real success with implementing some new educational models that are very cool and very new to me. And now I'm partnered up with their principal and we're sort of investigating like, what was the secret sauce of all of this? And at the same time, I'm getting to actually meet students who live in the area, teachers who live in the area, like understand essentially from my neighbors, like what is the holistic sort of like view and experience of Charlottesville? And so this education coursework has really connected me and plugged me in locally more than I expected. And it is just such a lovely piece of, if you're like moving to a new place and you're not from there and you're sort of like, you're just sort of nervous about it all, that these experiences exist and can make you feel more a part of the greater Charlottesville community. Like that just adds so much depth to this. I'd also say on the education side, we're like 20 to 25 students strong who are doing this dual degree. And so you get this really great, like intimate cohort experience with them. These people who are sharing this unique journey with you that your peers aren't experiencing, that can sometimes be really hard and sometimes have also like a lot of value and a lot of fun. Just having this group of like 20-ish, 25 peers that you can like share notes with and commiserate with and like hop on the phone with at any time and be like, wait, what are we supposed to be doing right now? That's built some like deep, deep bonds for me here that are going to last forever. And I'm so happy to have this group of peers and friends.
Well, Aiden, how'd you spend your summer between your first and second year?
Yeah. So the first big thing for me was that I geographically want to get back closer to where I'm from. So that's sort of landing around Boston. So that was like, that was a big part of the calculus of like what to do over the summer. I ended up being, as I was having conversations with different firms, that I found a couple where they were saying, and they did prove over the summer that I could have this experience where I combine sort of my MBA and my education passion. Ended up being that I went and interned with a consulting firm in Boston that has an education practice and was working on education sort of consultant work, that I could go and experience that and see like, actually, is this like what I think it's going to be? Like, or will it not be close to that purpose and impact that I want and be like that? Those were the questions I was trying to figure out over the summer. And so went, did this experience, got to work on with this sort of dual consulting education point of view, had an absolute blast. At the same time was, I think, having this other great social experience of, we had a smaller cohort of Darden people who went to Boston, getting to spend the summer with them. Also getting to meet the other MBAs from other schools that sort of like enter the mix during this and like expand our social network and like hear how their experiences were and like and build connectivity. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful time. I'm lucky that I got a return offer. I'm going back. So my second year has been sort of settled from the professional front. So, I mean, back to the retirement thing, that has really helped with me coming in and being like, this year, I'm only doing things that I really care about.
Well, I love that. It's a natural segue to my next question. You're an expert podcast guest here. So,
thank you.
what has kind of commanded your time, your attention here in your second year? How have you chosen to spend your time?
Yeah. So, you know, coming into second year, that's when you unlock and can really step into more leadership here at Darden for the full-time program. And I chose, right, you can probably predict this, I love education. I was going to be president of the education club. And I really wanted to help continue to create this this space and this opportunity for students, particularly first years, to investigate, like, how can you honor your, like, your love and your expertise of education and your sort of burgeoning MBA skills in your professional life, in your academic life, all that sort of stuff. And so I've been devoting a lot of time to the club, really building out, in particular, sort of how do we provide career guidance, support, what have you, to students who are navigating this tricky tightrope. And so that's, I've sunk a lot of time into that. At the same time, there's just so many creative outlets here as well that I was surprised by, honestly, when I first came to Darden. But, you know, coming from like a film background and a performance background, like I've sunk a lot of time into we just did our talent show at Darden, which is a wild experience. You do have to witness it to truly understand what it is. Talent show is a bad name for it. But it is a performance experience unlike any other. So spending time with that. I'm in a course right now where it's leadership and ethics and theater. And so we're sort of investigating the combination of like leadership and acting and what are the connections there. And we're doing a performance next week. So I've been doing a lot more acting and directing than I thought I would in business school.
To kind of reconnect you with that interest that you had in sort of performance and film and all of this kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's so surprising to me. None of these things go away. I think, you know, this first period of your career is so exploratory, and there's so many things you want to do, and you do some of them, and some of them stick and some of them don't. And the tendency, I think, especially for me when I was exiting film and entertainment, was to be like, all right, like that chapter is over. But it's come back here at Darden and academically. Definitely the consulting firm I'm going to has a strong entertainment practice, and I got to experience some of that over the summer. Like, I think there's just so much more room for your passions than I anticipated on this journey.
Well, let's talk about the talent show, maybe the not so aptly named talent show.
Oh, yeah.
What section are you?
I am proudly Section E, the Eels. Okay. So my first year, last year, coming into the talent show, we had come in last place in the talent show the year before. So, you know, the pessimistic view is like, gosh, we have so much we need to do to get better. The optimistic view is nowhere to go but up. So we were coming into it, was like, this is a turnaround strategy, as they'd say in the MBA program. Sorry, that's so corny. But, you know, and so nothing to lose. We were really lucky in that we had a partner of one of our students who is like a professionally trained actress, really strong dancer, choreographer. She came in, she's like, I'm going to choreograph a great finale. I came in as like, I'll make sure all the props and sets are there and people move to where they need to go. My friend was like, I'm going to write a really good script. My fiance is really good at music. She's like, I'm going to make sure we sing something. and sort of there's this confluence of people's like individual abilities and like willingness to really just collaborate that brought together this 10-minute set for the talent show. And this is what everybody does. It's like a 10-minute set where it's a narrative, like a one act play musical. It's not your traditional, like people get up there and juggle. So you do this 10 minute bit. We went on last year, we did it. It went really well. We ended up winning the talent show. So from fifth to first, so really great, but it meant coming into this year and this year's talent show, now the pressure was on. No, there was nowhere to go but down. So the key this year was maintaining and doing that with a whole set of new first years and making sure that it was really their show and honoring that and still being helpful was the big challenge.
How did they do?
Oh my gosh, they did really well. They came up with, gosh, we love a parody song here. They did Don't Stop Believing. But they made it Don't Stop E-Leaving to honor Section B. And also the fact that the chant for Section E is, I believe that E will win. So this big believing part. And plus we had this awesome guy on guitar who's doing like the Don't Stop Believing guitar solo. It was lovely. And it's such a high energy 10 minutes. It was awesome.
Wow, I have not judged one of these. I know a few people who judge the talent show. One of my admissions colleagues, Christian West, I think Christy Gundill, Mark Johnson has been involved. All folks I think we've had on the podcast at some point. But I will just say they talk about it's not easy to be a judge for the talent show. This is high stakes judging. Like people are really watching closely.
We really need yellow cards and red cards for the talent show, honestly. The surprising number of people who like get up in the judges' faces and are like, we just did this act, we just juggled. Like, how did we get this score? It's like, whoa.
High stakes, Darden Cup. You know, there's a lot on the line.
It shouldn't be the points. The points make it really, really vicious.
Well, Aiden, I wonder, you're almost to the end of your Darden experience. You've got a few months here. They'll be here before you know it, graduation. What's been the impact of your time here? You had to sum it up. Can you?
Oh, I think that's absolutely still something I'm processing. And something that my gut instinct is that I won't know the true answer to that for, 5 years, a decade. I one of the really nice things is that I talk with alumni way more than I thought I would. And you get to sort of like see the future a little bit with them. And gosh, they still, to this day, the ones I talk to are like, I was just remembering this thing I heard in this one accounting class. And all of a sudden it like changed my whole point of view on something that I was working on at work, things like that, you know? And I think just this has been such a densely packed like treasure trove of an experience academically and professionally and personally that it will take time to really uncover how it's changed me. And how it's changed the trajectory of my life. I know the immediate impact. I mean, I know that now, almost 2 years from where I started, I'm going into a whole new career. I have a whole new network. My life has fundamentally changed. And I feel so much more confident as well, especially like looking back at like my like mid-20-something Aiden that entered and like wasn't sure what he was going to do and just had a couple of experiences in his professional life and didn't know where it was all heading. Like I'm messing this with such clarity of what I want to do and the impact I want to have. And this has just been the perfect sort of incubator for that.
Well, Aiden, last question for you here.
Sure.
What's a piece of advice you would share with our prospective student listeners? Something you would encourage them to consider as they go forth on their own MBA journeys?
I was reflecting on this earlier. I think first off, if you're a prospective student who's listening to this podcast, you are already doing more than I did to really sort of engage with and understand this community. I think I was much more exploratory at this point. And so if you're listening to this, like, I think that's a really great indicator that you have a hunch that this is the place for you. And that you're really interested in what you're hearing and the people you're hearing from. And so like, just like follow that fun, right? Like keep listening to and talking with people that make you really feel like you're on the right path and that it's going to work out. I think maintaining that sort of that confidence and that, and not becoming self-conscious or scared is so important to the emotional process of applying to MBA programs. So you're off to a great start if you're listening to this. I think the second piece is, oh gosh, everybody says this, but really like trust the process and trust what the process, the outcomes of it. What I've learned through applying and like working with admissions people here at Darden is that they are experts at this. and their peers at other schools are experts at this, like the outcome that happens is going to be the right one. And if you can like find it in you to be like, to trust that, then that's a real gift that they're giving to you as well. And so eventually you're going to have a yes from an MBA school. Hopefully it's going to be here, and just know that that wasn't cursory. That was well thought out, like by people who want to see you succeed and think it will work well here. And I hope you feel the same.
Well, Aiden, thank you so much for your time today. It was great talking with you. Look forward to hearing more about your case, and best of luck as you close out this final semester.
Thank you so much. I will keep you up to date and I will send you a copy.
And that was my interview with Aiden Kahn, a second year student in our full-time MBA class of 2024 and a dual degree student in our MBA Masters of Education dual degree. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can reach us at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, @virginia.edu. Till next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.